This is Friday, the 18th of November, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Coming up, the U.S. president-elect makes some choices, some of them controversial, to fill the top spots of some key cabinet positions. Talk with VOA national correspondent Jim Malone about that. President Obama, on his last visit to Europe while in office, had a message for European allies. VOA's Luis Ramirez will join us with that. Also ahead, we join a group of female Yazidi fighters battling ISIL in Iraq. It's all on today's International Edition. Well, Jim Malone is joining us, as he does very often, after a day when the U.S. president-elect, Donald Trump, has made some selections for people he would like to see in his cabinet. Jim, some are considered to be, by some, controversial. Others are expected. Are they expected? Who are they? Who are these people?
Well, the overall theme here seems to be on two points. Number one, Trump is heading his formative government in a more conservative direction, for sure. And he seems to be focused on loyalists who were with him during the campaign. So that brings us to retired Lieutenant General Michael Flynn, who's being tapped as the National Security Advisor. Jeff Sessions, the senator from Alabama, as the Attorney General. And Kansas Congressman Mike Pompeo as the incoming CIA director, assuming both Sessions and Pompeo will require Senate confirmation. They all have some elements of controversy. I say in particular Flynn, who is well-decorated and has a distinguished career in terms of military intelligence, but his management style in the past has gotten him into some trouble, and also some very controversial comments about Islam that are going to make it interesting going forward. Remember, though, this is an appointment. This is not need to be vetted by the Senate.
Yeah, and then there was something about him being hired by the Russians to go to Russia and push their new television network.
Well, he was invited to a dinner last year where it was feted Russia Today, the state television arm, and he sat next to Vladimir Putin. And he has argued for two things: a much stronger military stance toward Islamic State, and also more cooperation with Russia in dealing with some of these issues. The other big pick here really is the Attorney General. This, in our history, the Attorney General is a very key member of the cabinet, and often a close confidant of the president, someone who has their back, so to speak. And Jeff Sessions is a stalwart conservative. He was actually nominated for a federal court bench job in the 80s, a federal judgeship, and he was not able to get confirmed by the Senate. There were some racially insensitive comments made, and people testified about that at the time. Whether that will affect things now, we don't know. Sessions has been in the Senate now for 20 years, so it would seem like he may have a path forward there.
Well, we also should probably say as well that the composition of both sides of the U.S. legislature on Capitol Hill, a block away from here, has changed somewhat. Or just being reinforced as being
right.
Republican, yeah.
Right, so Republicans, definitely control the Congress. So what we want to see, though, now is in the further appointments, what will be the determining factor? Is it loyalty to Donald Trump from the campaign? I mean, in light of that, we have a meeting coming up this weekend between Trump and Mitt Romney, who were at loggerheads for much of the past year.
Who would have ever predicted that?
Right. Now, we don't know if that's just trying to bind up wounds in the party, so to speak, or do they have some job in mind for Romney? There's been some speculation about Secretary of State, but that might seem like a long shot. But the Secretary of State pick, of course, is one that everyone is watching both here and around the world.
Jim Malone, we thank you very much for being with us. Let's get social media reaction to all of this and whatever else is happening around the world with our social media guru, Andrew Palczewski. What are you observing today?
Well, as soon as these picks were made, social media went to work going and looking at the records of these men that have been chosen, Jeff Sessions, Mike Pompeo, Michael Flynn, and Michael Flynn in particular facing some early controversy over a tweet that he retweeted back in July that was perceived as anti-Semitic, something that he apologized for, but people are bringing that up. And so social media has this role kind of and this ability to pull up these things as fact checkers and to look into these records and pull out the different facts and things for these men. So we'll continue to see that scrutiny, I think, as more names come out. The other big story, in addition to the Trump transition and the cabinet picks, as we've been talking about all week, and as I always joke, we're going to keep talking about for weeks and months, is this idea of fake news on social media. And now it's sparked comment from President Obama, who today in Berlin said in an extensive comment, so I'll read a little bit of it, said, "If we can't discriminate between serious arguments and propaganda, democracy will break down." Some really strong words from President Obama about how fake news is affecting the American electorate and affecting the political discourse in the U.S.
And the defense of this is that, oh, this must be successful because so many people are logging into it, right?
Well, it's, you know, the defense of the fake news is, I think, hard to come by. I think everybody wants there to be factual news and doesn't want any misinformation. The problem is when it's in support of your political position, then it's a different tune. I think people are less likely to say, "Oh, get rid of all this fake news," when it's something that fits with your political alignment. But there's always the issue, too, about free speech. As people say, okay, we want to cut down on this fake news and limit these things. But then people come back and say, well, you're curtailing my right to speak freely or express my views or what have you.
You know, I think a lot of people do not have any idea what the reason for journalism is. And I think that's part of what's leading to this. And something's got to happen because, first of all, journalism is being really looked down upon.
Well, we saw this in the election, the distrust of the media. And that was something that is, you know, still continues to persist. And that's why people are taking to social media to say, oh, we can bypass the media. We can, you know, they're not telling us the truth. We're going to use social media to tell the truth and expose these real facts. Well, the problem is they're not real facts. A lot of time they're fake.
And the conversation goes on and on and on, but necessarily so, we fear. Thank you so much, Andrew Palczewski, Jim Malone. Thanks to both of you. This is International Edition. Among the top stories going on, President-elect Donald Trump makes some key selections to fill some key positions in his administration. Outgoing President Barack Obama bids farewell to European allies, capping his final trip to Europe as president. Syrian government aircraft and artillery backed by its ally Russia intensify their offensive against rebel-held areas of Aleppo. Volkswagen and its labor unions have agreed on a plan that involves 30,000 job cuts by 2020. Expanded coverage of these stories and more on the VOAnews.com website, on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition.
This is Science in a Minute.
New studies suggest that an accumulation of ice in Pluto's Sputnik Planitia Basin, along with the existence of a subsurface ocean, may have played roles in the dwarf planet's reorienting and rolling on its side eons ago. Scientists say that the basin was probably created by a giant meteorite blasting away a large amount of the planet's crust in the area, making it much thinner. This thinner crust could have allowed a subsurface ocean beneath it to well up toward the basin. The added mass of the accumulated ice and upwelled water in the basin area, combined with tidal forces between Pluto and its largest moon, Charon, could have caused the planet to reorient itself. Sputnik Planitia, which was formed northwest of its current location, rolled toward Pluto's equator, ending up directly opposite of the side facing Charon. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. In what is likely the last such gathering before he leaves office in January, President Barack Obama joined the leaders of major European countries in Germany Friday to discuss security and economic challenges facing the transatlantic partners. Now, this session with the leaders of Germany, Britain, France, Spain, and Italy expanded on talks Mr. Obama held a day earlier with the German Chancellor Angela Merkel. We welcome to International Edition VOA's Chief European Correspondent, Luis Ramirez, who joins us from London. Luis, what was the message President Obama wanted to deliver to his fellow heads of state?
Number one, it was a message of reassurance that the United States, no matter who's in charge, will remain an enduring and steadfast partner of Europe, that the core values that the United States and its European partners have in common are above all things. And first of all, there was a reassurance that the United States will live up to its NATO commitments and will defend all of its NATO allies. This, of course, was a necessary message after President-elect Trump, during his campaign, suggested that might not be the case, that the United States might not defend those members of NATO who do not pay their fair share to the alliance.
Well, let me ask you this. How can President Obama be sure that that's how President Trump will handle this? Is there any gauge of skepticism among the other European leaders?
Well, President Obama used the words, I am confident. I am confident over and over again, meaning that he cannot be responsible for President-elect Trump's actions or words. And he said that in so many words. He said, I'm not responsible for what he says and does. But what he said is, what I can assure people is that the United States and its core values remain the same, that we have far too much in common, that there is too much of a commitment to democratic values for anything to change too drastically. And on the other side, leaders, starting with German Chancellor Merkel, said that she is prepared to work with Mr. Trump, that, of course, the two countries, hers and the United States, will continue their relationship. They will work together, and that there is also a measure of confidence that that enduring relationship, those common values, will mean that there won't be any major changes.
Now, President Barack Obama has been well received in Europe ever since he took office. What's the overall feeling as far as Donald Trump is concerned?
There is one of great uncertainty, also of hope. Uncertainty because of the remarks that he made during his campaign that were quite caustic, that were quite confrontational, and that gave people in Europe the impression that the United States was going down the path, or it will go down the path, in their view, in their perception, of isolationism. That's something that deeply alarms people on this continent because of the history of the last century. However, there is the hope that, again, because of these shared values, relations will not change all that much, that it'll simply be a new atmosphere in which they will have to work.
Well, in addition to saying goodbye, what were some of the other main topics that were discussed by these leaders?
Fundamentally, there was the message from President Obama, and certainly agreement from the EU allies or EU partners and NATO allies, that they should stand up to Russia. That there should be continued cooperation through multilateral institutions, including NATO. Confidence that even at a moment of great change, as the White House said, democratic values have done more to advance what the president referred to as human freedom and progress than any other system in history. There was a mention of grave concern for the situation in Syria, with President Obama and European leaders agreeing that they should continue to push for a diplomatic solution. Called for Russia to stop bombing Syria and more to solve the humanitarian situation in Aleppo. So those were big issues. Also very notable was that they agreed that sanctions should be maintained against Russia as long as it continues to interfere in eastern Ukraine.
Luis Ramirez is VOA's chief European correspondent. As always, Luis, thanks for being with us. And we go from Louise Ramirez in London to New York City, where Jill Malandrino, International Edition's finance editor, is standing by. Hopefully she's sitting by. And you're saying that the market is moderating just a bit. It had been up for a few days, right?
It certainly has. And hello from Wall Street. We're pulling in just a bit, but we hit all-time highs on all the major averages this week. In fact, the NASDAQ opened at an all-time high. And really what we're seeing here following the election is sector rotation. So if you recall from last week, there were significant sell-offs in the tech stocks, and just this morning, the tech-heavy NASDAQ hit an all-time high. So I think that's what we're going to see more of as the presidential transition takes place. Another area of the market that traders are paying attention to are the volatility in bonds. So I think we're going to continue to see more of that. Consensus view says that increased policy uncertainty and expectations for higher deficit spending by the incoming administration will be inflationary and lead to higher rates. So you're going to get some yield volatility there. But if we look outside of the administration transition and the potential interest rate hike, which is priced in at about 90% on December 14th, traders are also looking at how the dollar performs relative to global currencies. And they're also looking at China's stance on U.S. trade. That's something for President-elect Trump to weigh as he decides whether to honor his proposal for tariffs on the world's largest trading nation. Potential sectors that could be impacted range from aircraft, so stocks like Boeing, to technology, so think of stocks like Apple, Cisco, Intel. Another concern that we're looking at is emerging markets. Any overt or threatened protectionism would slow world trade growth, and that could hurt regions counting on export-led growth. So I think the main areas you really want to be focused on right now are bonds, currency, and, of course, trade and economic policy.
Jill, thank you so much, and we'll talk next week about Janet Yellen and rate increases some more. Have yourself a good weekend.
Thank you.
This is International Edition. The Iraqi army is pushing toward Mosul. A growing brigade of Yazidi women fighters in the West gears up to defend their traditional cities. VOA's Heather Murdoch has more from Iraq.
On a quiet Monday evening, young female soldiers play volleyball as the sun goes down over their base, a converted schoolhouse. It may not be possible to find a Yazidi person in this region who doesn't have a tale of horror from the 2014 IS takeover. But amid the pain, young women arguably had it the worst. Thousands were kidnapped and sold into sexual slavery. Thousands more remain missing.
Militants took our daughters and sisters and sold them in other cities. I joined the Peshmerga to defend my homeland.
Since the IS takeover of much of this region, this brigade has grown from one to hundreds, and thousands more Yazidi women have asked to join. When IS swept in committing crimes, the United Nations says amounts to genocide. Tens of thousands of Yazidis fled to the mountains surrounding Sinjar. Thousands died of exposure. Others were slaughtered in the city and thrown into mass graves they had been forced to dig.
Any weapons we use on the front lines are to defend our daughters and our people. As Yazidis, we do not believe in attacking and murdering people. But nowadays, terrorists are blowing themselves up and killing people. They are like fire. We must fight fire with fire.
She says she fought on the front lines when Sinjar was captured by Peshmerga soldiers a year ago, and her troops are training to defend not just other Yazidis, but Kurdistan, their semi-autonomous region in Iraq, from anyone that would do them harm. Heather Murdoch, VOA News, Sununi, Iraq.
You are listening to, or reading, or watching, or hearing, or whatever you're doing, International Edition from the Voice of America. Fans of Rock and Roll Hall of Famers, the Rolling Stones, will get a chance to see some rare memorabilia from the group in New York City as International Edition's David Byrd tells us a new exhibit called Rolling Stones Exhibitionism has opened in New York City's West Village.
If you love the Rolling Stones, then Exhibitionism is for you. The show at New York's iconic Industria space in the West Village features 500 items from the Stones' storied career. It includes personal items, clothing, musical instruments, films, costumes, and other items in an immersive exhibition that follows the group from its beginnings until the present. Mick Jagger said at a pink carpet celebration when Exhibitionism opened in New York that each room offers visitors something they have never seen before.
Each room, we tried to make each room really different, so each room should be kind of like, oh, wow, I wasn't expecting that. So I think it's an entertaining like little walkthrough that you can spend an hour, you can linger, but, you know, it takes me an hour to go through.
For guitarist Keith Richards, a recreation of Edith Grove, the Stones' first shared apartment in London, brought back fond memories from decades ago.
That apartment is... Unbelievably, I looked at it and said, I'm home. In a way, there's a sense of nostalgia, but I think I walked away with it written and how much the Stones mean to so many people. And in that way, it's kind of humbling in a way.
Exhibitionism also features several of the band's costumes and artworks by Andy Warhol, Alexander McQueen, Prada, Dior, Ossie Clark, and others. It also comes as the band is set to release its first studio album in 10 years in December. Mick Jagger says that the new album was very organic, coming out of a time in the studio when the band had other songs planned.
We were doing an album of new songs in London, and we got in the middle and we started to play blues, and then we did 12 of them in 3 days. So we said, okay, we'll put that out first. And it's a kind of homage to our blues heroes from our kind of teenage years.
Keith Richards says the new album, like the exhibit, harkens back to the band's roots.
It kind of made itself. We went in the studio and suddenly the blues invaded the room. We just got carried away. And at the end of it, we didn't intend to make an album. But suddenly we realized there was an album there.
Exhibitionism will be in New York until March 12th of 2017 when it heads to Chicago, Illinois. In Washington, I'm David Byrd.
Oh, it's still good music. We've got a story, and I just wanted to squeeze in before we said goodbye today. The U.S. Justice Department is investigating whether recent reports of alleged intimidation and harassment, including at schools and at churches, violate federal hate crime and other civil rights. That was in a statement by U.S. Attorney General Loretta Lynch. She said many Americans are concerned by a spate of recent news reports about alleged hate crimes and harassment, and they say numbers show that there is an increase in those crimes. You have been listening to International Edition. You can find us at voanews.com, like us on Facebook at VOA Now, and follow us on Twitter at VOA_IE. Thanks for joining us. Thanks to our director, Patrice Martin. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Please enjoy your day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Earlier this month, the house of Ghanaian presidential candidate Nana Addo-Dankwa Akufo-Addo was attacked. The United States Embassy in Ghana condemned the assault, saying violence has no place in the electoral process. In the period leading up to and following Ghana's elections on December 7th, the United States calls on all actors to remain peaceful and respect the democratic process. The United States does not support a particular candidate or a particular party. We support democracy, said the U.S. Embassy statement. We will continue to work with the freely elected government of Ghana, just as we always have. The United States urges all parties to make clear to their constituents that any violence or attempts to use intimidation to disrupt the democratic process is unacceptable. This will be the country's seventh poll since the return to multi-party democracy in 1992. President John Dramani Mahama is running on the ticket of the National Democratic Congress for a second term. five other candidates qualified to run for the presidency. Ghanaians from across the political spectrum have worked hard to build one of the leading democracies in Africa. State Department Press Office Director Elizabeth Trudeau said, "We specifically call on candidates, their parties, and their supporters to reaffirm their pledges to renounce violence and settle any disputes through the judicial process."
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. For a transcript of this and other VOA editorials, or to receive editorials by email, visit the VOA Editorials Internet homepage at www.voanews.com/editorials.